Yeah, we have five.
We're starting. Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, April 30th. It's 9:37 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha Von Imhoff, and I'm joined today by Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Machicki. We have President Giesel and Majority Leader Costello with us as well. We have a quorum to do business. Today's agenda is SB 91, Nuyukuk River, hydroelectric site. And we are also adding bills previously heard, SB 103, the PFD appropriation, and SB 104, appropriation limit. So we're going to start with the Nuyukuk River hydroelectric site, SB 91. This is an act relating to the development and operation of a hydroelectric site on the Nuyukuk River Falls, providing for the amendment of a management plan for the Wood-Tichick State Park and providing for an effective date. And Senator Wilikowski joined us. I'd like to invite Senator Lyman Hoffman and his staff, Tim Grusendorf, to present the bill. Is Tim here? Senator Hoffman, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, this is not the notorious Senate Bill 91 that many people remember. This is a new bill that I believe will be a lot less controversial than the aforementioned Senate Bill 91, which has received a lot of attention statewide. But to get to the issue, energy costs have been something that I've been trying to address for rural Alaska for many, many years. And I think that Senate Bill 91 gives a great opportunity to a part of the state of Alaska, the Bristol Bay region, to lower the energy costs. Senate Bill 91 would allow for possible development of a hydroelectric site in the Nuyukuk River in the Wood-Tichick State Park. It lists the project as not an incompatible use amendment to the Parks Management Plan, which allows permitting and project evaluation to move forward. Other sites in the Wood-Tichick Park are already listed as not an incompatible use. The Lake Elva and the Grant Lake both were evaluated and found not viable hydroelectric projects. The project, if found viable, would serve six communities in the Bristol Bay region, those being the largest, of course, Dillingham, Alignagik, New Stewihawk, Equock, Leavelock, and Kalignik, potentially displacing an amazing 1.5 million gallons of diesel every single year. Nooshigak Electric and Telephone Cooperative is working on the project and is in 1 year of a three-year FERC permit and needs Senate Bill 91 to finish the evaluation and the viability of the project. With that, I have, there are only two sections to the bill. Madam Chairman, if I could go over those.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Section one adds the quote, or the Nuyukuk River Falls to Alaska Statutes 41.21.67C to be included to the list of sites that are not considered an incompatible use in the Wood-Tichick State Park. And Section 2 instructs the Wood-Tichick State Management Council, along with the Department of Natural Resources, to amend the Wood-Tichick Management Plan to conform with the changes made in Section 1. Those are those are the two simple sections in the bill. And with that, I will be able to answer any questions that the committee may have and ask that my staff, Mr. Grusendorf, come up to assist me as a lifeline.
Are there any questions by committee members We also have, following the Senator, Mr. Bob Armstrong with the Nooshgak Cooperative Electric Operations Manager. I just want to let everybody know that he is invited testimony, and he will be going over, I believe, this presentation, yes. So just wanted to let everybody know what the situation is. So Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. At some point in the presentation, I'd like some discussion on the, looks like a run a river process, and I'm not familiar with, because it's so far north and we're so tropic where I live, what the winters are like on that river as far as volumes of water moving, when I would assume the demand for power is the highest in the winter to keep homes warm, and how this river system reacts to the severe winters.
So absolutely, the demand though also for freezer space in the summertime, I believe, is pretty high for all the fish that your area catches.
That is absolutely true, and I think that those numbers would be provided by the presenter. But I like to joke with your co-chairman, Madam Chairman, that his freezer space for his communities is, in the most parts of winter, a lot warmer than the ambient temperature in the north of the Arctic Circle, where many people of Alaska live.
Are there any other questions for our bill sponsor?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seeing none, thank you very much, Senator Hoffman. Thank you very much, Mr. Pusendorf. So we have Mr. Armstrong. He's on the line with us, and he is going to, Mr. Armstrong, can you hear us?
I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Oh, I'm in the room.
I'm in the room.
Why don't I pay attention? Okay, Mr. Armstrong, thank you. State your name for the record and then begin your PowerPoint.
Yes, my name is Bob Armstrong. I'm Electric Operations Manager for Nooshgak Cooperative.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay. I come to Dillingham 3 years ago and took over the Operations Department for Nooshgak Cooperative. Power cost, as Senator Lyman Hoffman said, it is extremely high there, so we're looking for ways to get it lower. This one we found this site here. If you can look on the to the top right corner of your screen, running down to the middle of the screen, you can see a line of mountains. The top part of the lake system, which is 1,544 square miles of drainage, comes out the Nooshgak River and breaks over that ridge that was created by glaciers years ago. Kind of acts like a natural dam. The lakes act as a sediment pond, and the spillways, the falls are like a spillway for a regular hydro site. What we're looking to do is tap that river at the upper side of the falls. You can see how big the water reservoir is. That's Lake Mead on the right, and that's the Tick-Chick Lake system on the left. Nooshgak Falls is about 2.5 miles inside the Wood-Tick-Chick State Park, which is why we need these bills passed. There's been a flow meter there since 1953. When I started searching around for the flows for this project, I went to the USGS site, and they've had one there since 1953. So I had 60-plus years of daily flow data to work with. And then we used Google Earth Pro to get a desktop prediction of the flow, the drop at the falls. We're thinking that 25% of the flow will give us anywhere from 4.5 to 10 megawatts. That's according to the year, time of year. As he brought up earlier, you would think that the power cost or your power demand would be higher in the winter, but it's not. In Dillingham, it is higher in the summer because of the fish processing. It's extremely higher in the summer, and that is when our flows are the highest in the river. When our demand for power is the lowest is dead winter, which is when the flows in the river are the slowest. Any questions?
We do. Wait, Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. What's the required megawatt usage for the area that you're seeking to service right now?
We peaked out at 4.8 megs last year. That was our peak, and it was the highest ever in Dillingham. The upriver villages all together are about 600 kW, not even a megawatt.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
And then what's your plan as far as where the transmission lines will run to?
There's another slide, I'll show you exactly where that's at.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, you know, you talked about the peaks in the summer, and I know from my recent trips, not recent, but trips to the region in the past in another capacity, there were some discussion about if they had cheaper energy, they maybe could put in some ICE facilities. Is that any of that discussion been continued on? I know that they had talked about ICE, and that gives more of a premium to the fishermen, which brings more revenue and more value into the region.
Yeah, nobody's approached us directly yet with the ICE. I'm sure with the availability of the energy there, that would be something that we'd be looking at. As you know, with the lower cost of energy, that's going to help the fish. The processors will be able to process for cheaper, which means that it'll be passed on to the fishermen.
Just a quick follow-up. You know, it's interesting that USGS has been monitoring the flow since 53. Did you find any data in your research? Were they looking at hydro potential back then?
No, I did not.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Could you put it in cents per kilowatt? It makes it easier to understand. There's the remote villages that you said consume less than a megawatt. Then there's Dillingham, which is kind of the metropolitan area with the fish processors, what they pay per kilowatt generated, and then what would be the expected if this $130 million cost prevails, what would be the kilowatt rate that the community should be expecting?
That is going to be, that's a really hard question to answer because of the fact that we don't have the studies done yet. That's why we need to get these studies done. It's going to decide how much potential we have here or if it's even viable. But even if it is viable, there's going to be limits on the amount of CFS, amount of water that we'll be able to use. According to how much water we can use, that's going to determine the price because being a co-op, we're a non-profit electric company. So the more we can sell, the cheaper we can sell it for. So if we can produce more, it'll be cheaper. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying? So the problem is we can make assumptions, and we have in this presentation, but to get the real numbers of exactly what the kilowatt hour charge is going to be, we need to know how much we're going to be able to produce.
If I could just follow up, I mean, just using current consumption, I would expect the consumption is going to go way up, so I'm glad to see that you're proposing additional generation capacity. And I would expect that their rates are somewhere in the 50 to 60 cents, possibly, per kilowatt in that region, and hopefully this will cut it in half, thereabouts. But at the current consumption and $130 million cost, it should have some ballpark number of what it would cost.
Yeah, we'll be able to get the cost, the fuel surcharge will come off the cost right off the top, and it's 17 cents out of the 42 that we charge now for residential.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, I just wanted to declare a potential conflict. I worked for Electrical Workers Union, and I don't know if they'll be involved in this project potentially in the future or not, but I just wanted to declare that potential conflict.
It's okay. This is for our committee, so thank you.
Okay.
So I have actually a couple questions. So I was in Dillingham last summer, and there were several windmills out, so people are harnessing wind right now. Do you plan to do a comparison in terms of, to get to Senator Stedman's point, a cost per kilowatt that folks are doing with wind? And I saw Senator Hoffman, did you want to answer, or you're asking another question? Okay. So there is wind, so how will this transmission line compete with wind or compare with wind?
It'll be cheaper than wind. Hydro is everywhere it's ever been put in. The problem with wind at Dillingham, our mountains are set back off the road system, so we have no roads to the mountaintops, and that's where your wind's going to be best at, so you're going to have a huge expense just getting to the site to put wind in. There are some smaller windmills in town, and they do okay. The state itself done a wind study pretty much over the whole state, and we looked at that before when I initially got there. That's one of the first things I looked at. And all of the sites that show good potential for the kind of power that we need to run the community are inaccessible.
Okay, thank you. And so the second question I have is, Senator Stedman alluded to the $126 million price tag. Do you by chance just have any inkling of where you might go to get those funds?
Yes, we'd go to RUS. It's a government agency that loans money to co-ops all over the country. And we've met with them in D.C. and run the numbers by them, and even if the costs are a little higher than that, they'll be able to help us out.
So thank you. So the $20,000 for this fiscal note, is that going to be partly used to do a business analysis, if it hasn't done already, on the loan costs and the financing costs?
The $20,000? I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
There is a fiscal note with this bill, and I can ask Senator Hoffman or others for that note. I'll delay that question for another person. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there any other questions from committee members? Please continue with your slideshow.
Okay. This is how we designed it. It's the blue line there in the middle. Or you can see it's at the, and on the right, on the left-hand side is the upper side of the falls. So that's where you tap it, and then you dump it out right at the bottom of the falls. Very short, 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 foot penstock that's going to run that water from the upper side of the falls down through your turbines. Does a couple different things when you do it this way. You have very little water temperature change, and the nitrogen levels that come up because of turbulence in your water is about the same as what it is coming through the falls. Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What do you have any concerns about impacts to fish?
That's why we want to get these studies done. And yes, Dillingham is a fishing community, so we're very concerned with the fish. In fact, our board has passed a fish first policy that says that if it's damage to the fishery, we will not do this project. I'm not sure if you're aware of the FERC process, but FERC is the same way. FERC is very comprehensive studies that you have to do for any project that you do like this, and if there's going to be damage to the environment, not only the fish, the wildlife, the habitat, they're going to make you correct whatever issues there is.
Senator Wilkowski, follow up.
Is there a salmon run, I assume, that runs through here, or native trout, Dolly Varden?
Yes, there is. That's the reason we designed it the way we did. Ordinarily, you put a dam in, as everybody probably knows, with hydro. With what we need for power in this region, we think that this design here is going to lead the river just the same path it always had. The fish will still be able to freely go up and down the river, and we'll be able to get the power out of it too. So instead of designing it for maximum output, or production of power, it's designed to coexist with the environment.
Senator Wilson has a question.
Thank you. On follow-up to that, what stage is the project are in now in terms of permits, and when those permits might be completed in terms of some of those studies?
June will be the year anniversary on our FERC permit. It's a three-year permit for us to get the studies done. We did the two studies that were allowed in the state park last year, and we cannot do any more studies until these bills pass. That's why we want these bills passed, to try to get the rest of the studies that the FERC process calls for to be done. But under the current statutes, we cannot do it until these bills pass.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Armstrong, when you say these bills, you're referring to this one, and is there another one?
The House.
Okay, the House companion bill.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other further questions? Please continue.
This shows the location of the site according to the overall fishery. This is the transmission route. The yellow lines are existing power lines that we have now. Dillingham and Alicnagic are tied together and fed by the Nooshiak Cooperative right now. And Equawk and New Stewiak are tied together by AVEC, different co-op. The red would be the construction that we'd have to do to serve these communities.
Senator Wilikowski.
Is there any plan to have transmission lines go to any of the mines or proposed mines in the region?
No, sir. The closest one is 90 miles away. And there's not enough power potential here to do them any good. The only mine that I know about, I think they need 180 megawatts. So it's not even close.
Senator Bish, Stedman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just for my good colleague across the table, as we've worked here for many years together looking at different energy projects, and some of which have been in my region, we just caution that when they give you the numbers, you add a little extra, like 30 to 50%. I've never seen these projects come in overall on time and schedule. There was one intertie section from Ketchikan heading towards to Wrangell that came in on budget. The rest of them have been way off, and sometimes the bid amounts have been 25-30% above expectations. So just be a little careful and add in your analysis. I'd recommend you add a good measure of cost overruns on it to make sure it works. We've had difficulty in my region with some of these projects. One of them was bid and then not or basically stopped by the community after the bid opening and went back for redesign to shave off about a third of it, 25% of it, to get it to the affordable range of the consumer. So just as a word of caution, just due to history here at the table and these electrical projects, they never seem to come in and surprise us on the low end. They always surprise us on the upper end.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. And just to build upon that, a lot of the projects I think in Southeast Alaska were built on grants, not loans, federal grants. And I think the challenge will be is if you build this, and just to make sure that consumers are incentivized economically to pay whatever the rates are, and ideally they'll be less than what they're paying now. The question I have for you on these red lines is that I'm assuming those are aerial transmission lines. As you know, that there are a lot of plane activity in this area and a lot of cloudy, foggy weather. We hear of plane crashes from our late Senator Ted Stevens, right where that between Alicnagic and the hydro plant probably is where his plane went down. So there are not only that, a lot of muskeg, a lot of water. Is part of your studies going to be to look at the safety of the environment and then the safety of the air traffic as well?
Yes, it will be. Every bit of the route of the transmission will have to be studied as well, not just the hydro site. All of that whole project overall will have to be studied. The one coming down to Alicnagic, that route there is right at the top of the glacier moraine, which is basically a gravel bed with a little bit of topsoil on top. It's a really good route. The line comes right by Kemuck Mountain and goes to Equawk. there's also a ridge there. That's the reason that the line is there, is because there's a ridge that runs across to that. From Equawk to Leavelock is mostly all tundra. So all of that will be taken into account with the studies as to the best way to do it. We've been checking out a new type of pole that you put in, and it's got a, I don't want to get too technical, but it basically attaches to a track hoe or similar machine and vibrates a caisson into the ground. So there's no digging involved, no concrete, and then you bolt your pole to that. What we'll be using is probably 34.5 transmission voltage, which is really a sub-transmission. It's not even really a transmission line. It'll be single pole structures, probably 50 footers, about the same as most of the trees out there when it's running through the trees. So it's not going to be sticking way up. It's not going to be a huge tower system, just for that very reason, to make sure that we can keep the air traffic as safe as possible.
Any further questions? Please continue.
This gets into the cost again. We're estimating $120 million. You never know what's going to happen when with the funding part of it. There may be some grant opportunities for some of the project. This 120 would be the full cost. You can see just below that, our costs over the next 40 years are going to be about $147 million. If we keep doing everything we're doing now the exact same way, and all the prices for everything we're paying right now stays the same for 40 years, it's going to be $147 million. We all know that's not going to happen. It's probably going to be a lot more. The cost of regulation and cost of fuel is definitely going to be going up. Another part of this project that we haven't talked about yet is the transmission line and route, and right away will also add a give us a way to bring broadband hardline fiber to all the upriver villages and Dillingham from Leavelock.
Senator Stedman.
And just a quick two comments. One of them is on the comparison. It looks like the 120 is in current dollars, 20 million, 147 is in future dollars. So I have to discount that back for a comparison. But regardless of that comparison, as long as the rate to the consumer is lower than this 60 cents target or whatever, and hopefully it's half of that or less, I would expect the economic activity in Dillingham to be much more competitive with their ability to make ice and store fish, and they'll have a lot of economic generation from this project, not electrical generation, but economic generation for jobs and higher fish prices to the fishermen, and hopefully lower cost in holding groceries in the store and all kinds of incidentals like that that aren't reflected in these numbers. So I would expect it to be very advantageous to the region.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I've been working for co-ops for 39 years, all over the country, and that's everybody knows that that your energy cost is the baseline of your economy, no matter which town you're living in, which community you're in. Whatever your cost of energy is, it's going to set your standard of living, basically. That's why we're trying to get it as low as we possibly can to still maintain the best service possible.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do we have any questions? That's the finish. Okay. Do we have any questions for Mr. Armstrong here? Senator Bishop.
Thank you. As you look at the proposal before us, And one of the concerns for me is, we are in global warming. The debate is how much of it is man-made and how much of it is naturally occurring. But it's here. And I look at the potential of this project. removing diesel fuel out of the environment. So I was curious as to how much carbon footprint this would eliminate if we were to displace this diesel fuel.
Yeah, I've been asked that question before. I do not have a number on that. I think it was, we do have emissions tests that we have to do. They measure the CO, the NOx, and the particulate matter that we have a permit that we have to operate underneath. As far as a carbon footprint, that's not part of the equation that our permit makes us live by, so I don't have a number on that. I can get to committee the numbers on the NOx, the CO, and the particulate matter that we put out.
Just brief follow-up. Madam Chair, thank you. I don't like assuming anything, because when you assume something, that's when it goes awry, but I would think that the FERC, when you complete your FERC study, that number will be there.
Yes. Yes, sir, it will.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman has a question.
Just another comment, you know, because I have villages, it has a lot of similarities with Senator Hoffman and Senator Olson on diesel power and high costs, and a lot of communities on hydro. And it comes down to some very simple comparisons, one of which is Christmas lights. Why do the villages have very few Christmas lights? It's not because they don't enjoy Christmases like everybody else. It's the cost of power to run the lights. And when it comes down to that simple stuff, there'll be a lot of synergy being created by bringing lower cost power, and it will make even little things like Christmas much more enjoyable to the communities in the area. And frankly, I've had some of my villages come testify in the other hydro communities on that very subject. We want to be able to have Christmas lights like everybody else, and we can't afford to have Christmas lights. So I support this package going forward to get some studies done and try to move on to electric, our hydro generation, with the concern expressed to Senator Hoffman that he watches the numbers close and adds extra to whatever the engineers are telling him, because they rarely ever get it right.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So what we have next is we have a few folks signed up for public testimony. One of them in particular is Mr. Corey Warnock with McMillan Jacobs Engineers. So he's been added to my list as a specific invited testimony as well. And we have him online, and we have a couple other people after that. So I'm gonna go ahead and open public testimony at this time. Okay, Mr. Warnock, we have you signed up. Can you hear us, and can you state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
I can, Madam Chair, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you, thank you.
Okay, my name's Corey Warnock, and as you said, I work for McMillan Jacobs Associates. I'm actually a senior licensing and regulatory specialist and have been managing licensings and relicensings in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska primarily for the last 19 years or so. I'm a fisheries biologist by trade, so that additional background sort of assists in my day-to-day duties while, you know, being able to speak the language with one of the kind of priority topics that usually comes up in these types of processes. I think I'm just primarily here to support Bob, who did a very good job of laying out the project as we know it right now. I know that there has been some concern out there regarding this bill specifically and the potential for it to in some way expedite the overall construction, development, and operation of this project. And I think I'm just here to provide some insight into the FERC regulatory process and the fact that whether or not, this bill passes, that FERC regulatory process will still take precedent. And the intent behind this bill is simply to allow the studies to go forth inside state project boundaries that will ultimately determine the feasibility of this project. There's an extremely rigorous and onerous process that needs to take place over the next 3 to 4 years to get this to a standard or to make a determination as to whether or not it can even move forward. And this bill will allow that assessment to go on. I know that the cooperative is committed to doing those studies, at the end of which they would make a determination as to whether or not this project is actually feasible. So I'm happy to go into any of the details of that process, both from a regulatory and a natural resource perspective, if folks have questions. And with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. Do committee members have any questions about the permitting process? Seeing none, thank you, Corey, for your... Oh, excuse me, I have...
Well, this is just kind of a off-the-cuff comment, but I think it would be nice for the people in the city, tell the people in rural areas to continue to burn diesel that they ought to burn it themselves. So, I would hopefully... They put a lot of weight in the lifestyle and the quality of life that Alaskans have, and that rural Alaskans deserve as equal quality and standard of living as everybody else in America.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Did you want Mr. Warwick to? No. Okay. Thank you, Corey, for your testimony. And we have someone signed up next, Mr. Robert Himshute, with Nooshigak Electric out of Dillingham.
Madam Chair, committee, thank you for having this hearing today and having us present. I'm the CEO, general manager of Nooshigak, and I won't take up much of your time. I just generally want to say that Nooshigak has taken a look at this project over the last year and a half. We knew that this was going to be a regional project after a very short evaluation of the potential of this project. It has the potential to turn diesels off in those communities that Senator Hoffman stated earlier. The overall savings of 1.5 million gallons of diesel burned a year. I haven't run the average carbon footprint on that. But it's still 1.5 million gallons is a considerable amount of carbon. We did a public outreach process that included over 70 meetings and all the local communities in which we outlined the project and the process we'd need to go through to build support for this project before we took it to this level. I believe that we have very solid regional support. I believe that we've done as much due diligence as we can to try to determine if this is a viable project with the data that we could generate from a desktop perspective. And if you allow this bill to go forward, we will do the physical on-the-ground work that we need to do to continue that evaluation and make a decision as to whether this is feasible. But the potential for our region and for our economy is huge. With that, I'll complete my testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Himshute. Are there any questions? Okay, so the next person signed up to testify is Mr. Peter Andrew, the president of the Nooshigak Corporation. Can we hear Mr. Andrew? Can you hear us? Can you state your name?
Sorry, the phone said my line was unmuted, but my phone was not. I apologize. I'm a director on the Nooshigak board. I've been serving since probably about 20 years, give or take one or two. But I am available for questions for anyone that has any for the cooperative. We're walking into this potential project with our eyes open. We've had a lot of dialogue over a year and a half with DNR, trying to figure out ways to get into the park. We've had support, and we look forward to trying to figure out a way to be self-sustaining. And with that, I am just standing by for any concerns or questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Andrew. I don't see any questions here by our committee. Thank you. Next person signed up to testify is Mr. Mark Lizick out of Dillingham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my name is Mark Lisick. I'm a 36-year resident of Dillingham. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm also a Michigan Co-op member. I'm a retired fisheries biologist. I've been accused of being an environmentalist, but I'm also a renewable energy advocate. I've spent a lot of personal time traveling and camping throughout the Woodtick-Chick State Park. Years ago, the two sites that are currently in the legislation were investigated by the co-op using an Alaska Energy Authority grant. I was opposed to those projects because they required damming those drainages. Both those projects were eventually found unfeasible, and the co-op did the right thing and canceled the grant with the AEA to pursue them. So I'm in support of SB 91 to amend the statutory language to include the Nuyukuk River Falls, just because it's the only way really to get the permission from the DNR to go in and investigate to see if this project's even feasible. So rather than having that hanging out there for the years, I think it's important that we just go and get the answers. I mean, just the amount of diesel and energy security this project has the potential to provide, and the diesel that could be eliminated as a primary power source, I think is important to at least take a look at it. So with that, thank you very much, and I'll hang on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Lysak, for that perspective. Thank you for your testimony. The last person I see signed up right now is Paul Lidberg.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Paul Lidberg. Been a resident of Alaska for 40 years, rural communities for 30 years, and Dillingham for 15 years. Excuse me. I'm currently retired, but obtained my undergraduate education in resource management and served a 36-year career in that field. We must take very seriously the commitments made by legislative bodies when designated areas worthy of protections, those areas including the Woodtick-Chick State Park. Considerable debate went into the decision to establish the park, and the original legislation should not be taken lightly or without due consideration from the original intent. And the proposed change to the language here to the park designation is a case, I think, where careful consideration is certainly warranted. What we currently know is that if the project is developed, there'll be impacts to the park and to the resources within the park. What we don't know, though, is what level of positive and negative impacts there'll be to the natural environment, our regional communities, and to society as a whole. Despite the surge in oil and gas development in the country, there's still an energy crisis in most parts of rural Alaska. The thing I believe we need to consider here is whether the impact from developing a hydro project on the Nuyukuk River within the park is a fair exchange for the expected impacts. I'm a proponent of collecting the information necessary to make a better informed decision, as long as that collection of information doesn't materially conflict with the original intent of the park. In this case, I believe that conducting the necessary baseline studies to assess the project would not materially conflict with the original intent of the enabling legislation. I can't provide an opinion yet on whether I support full development of the project. That would depend on many factors and much more information still to be learned, including not only the resource impacts, but the siting of the facilities, how the project would be operated, expected power production, and other factors. Rural Alaska and the rest of the country, for that matter, will not escape the present or future energy needs without impacts to our natural environment. But what you as lawmakers and we as citizens need to be watchful for is that those impacts are the wise ones. In this case, I certainly think it's wise to move forward at a minimum to conduct the studies and evaluate the project further. Thank you for your time and consideration of this issue.
Thank you very much for your testimony. You made some good points. Is there anyone else online signed up to testify? Anyone else in the room wishing to testify on SB 91? Seeing and hearing none, public testimony is closed. We have Senator Hoffman, we're ready to do the fiscal note if you're ready.
I've got a couple comments.
Or we have Mr.
Madam Chairman, I got a couple comments before.
We have a couple comments from Senator Stedman.
Yeah, well, Senator Hoffman's going to raise a couple comments. I'd just like to remind the committee, back in the early part of the last century, the community of Petersburg went together and financed Crystal Lake. A little hydro project was out way out in the wilderness at that point, 17 miles off the road. Of course, now we have a paved road to it. That venture was very expensive at the time. And they built that in order to make ice so they didn't have to go over to LeConte Glacier and get ice for their boats, the fishing fleet. And then that enabled the fishing fleet to be able to stay out longer, come in with larger catches, higher quality, and also have ice to pack fish and ship it south. That hydro is still spinning today. Another example here in Juneau, I think it was Gold Creek, hydro was put in the early part of the century, very, very early part of the century, last century, and that is spinning till today. Neither one of those projects adversely affected the region other than probably helped Sitka lose the capital when they had cheaper electricity over here in Juneau. But with that being said, and then the impact of the area of five small villages and one medium-sized community up there, this hydro isn't going to affect that region, adversely affect that region. It's going to be a heck of a benefit. When you have a run of the river and you're sidestepping the rapids, you're not going to have much impact in the rivers. So this is a very good example of how to move hydro projects forward versus damming and creating a lake and having to deal with fish weirs and all kinds of stuff, to fish ladders, all kinds of things like that to keep your, you know, your fish stocks up. As far as the environment and the impacts, the fuel that's not burned in these generators are going to be burned somewhere else in the world. The projection of fuel consumption is up, not down, regardless of what we do here. And quite frankly, there isn't enough people in Western Alaska to impact the footprint anyway. There's virtually nobody up here in comparison when you look at China and India and metropolitan USA, where most of the environmental issues are residing around. And then after we deal with India, after China, then we got Africa. So some of the arguments that I see for blocking development in Alaska is laughable. The issue of the park, most of the state is a park. We have a very small human footprint in the entire state. And I don't know the selection. I don't know the area well enough at all to know the selection of the park. But I know in Southeast, sometimes they select things to intentionally block development 15, 20, 30 years out, including hydro sites. And they're selected intentionally to restrict the development. So I think we should be flexible with the area, allow this to go forward, have the analysis done, and I would expect the analysis to be positive, and then we go on and try to electrify these communities and off of hydro.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Grusendorf, please present the fiscal note when you're ready.
Yeah, for the record, Tim Grusendorf, staff to Senator Hoffman. The Department of Natural Resources did put out a fiscal note for $20,000 to anticipate impacts to revise the existing Wood-Tikchik State Park Management Plan and to match the statutory changes required in the bill. So that was done by DNR.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the fiscal note? Okay, we are going to set Senate Bill 91 aside for further review. Please let my office know as soon as possible if you have any concerns or amendments. So, our next agenda item is Senate Bill 103, an act relating to the deposits into the dividend fund and appropriations from the earnings reserve account and providing for an effective date. This is called the split bill. Senate Bill 103 was previously heard on April 10th and again on April 29th. So what we have is a CS for your consideration with just a couple changes on it. And we're going to have Julie Lucky please come to the table and go through the CS, please.
For the record, Julie Lucky, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. Madam Chairman, you might...
I have a motion. I apologize. Senator Steadman, can I have a motion to adopt the CS?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill Number 103 Finance, Version G, dated 4/29/19.
Do we have any objection? Okay, I will object. I have to read the script, Julie, and I apologize. I will object for the purposes of discussion and ask committee staff Julie Lucky to present the changes to the CS.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, for the record, this is Julie Lucky, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. You should have in front of you work draft G, and there should be an accompanying summary of changes. The changes in the bill are mostly technical. We reworded the appropriation language to conform to current practices, and you can find that language on page 2, lines 25 through 27. And I will just read that the process would be that the funds get transferred from the earnings reserve to the general fund first, and then out of the general fund to the dividend fund. And we were instructed by our budget folks that that is the way that the transfer actually happens, the appropriation actually happens. There's some clarifying language, and you'll see that it's like on page 3, lines 29 to 31. And sorry, I was looking at the wrong highlights there. And if you had noticed in the previous version of the bill, sections 3713, 145E, and F were repealed. After some discussion with legislative legal, we determined that only F needed to be repealed and E instead needed to be rewritten. And so that's what you'll see here. And what 3713, 145E does is just makes the statement that the legislature may not appropriate more from the earnings reserve account than they are allowed to under the POMV draw, so it's restricting the appropriation from the ERA to the draw amount. There's a July 1, 2020 effective date added, and you'll see that on page 4, line 29. There are also a couple of additional technical corrections recommended by legislative legal, and those you'll find on page 3, lines 25 through 26. And there are also two sections in the previous bill that were deleted in this bill, and the previous sections 6 and 7, all they did was make conforming changes to the mental health trust fund and how net income was calculated for that fund. And those are all the changes in the CS. I would like to note that the fiscal net has not yet been presented on this bill, so there won't be any changes as there hasn't been one presented at this time. That concludes my summary of the changes, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Lucky. Are there any questions on the CS? I will remove my objection. Are there any further objections to the adoption of the CS? Okay, seeing no objection, then the CS is adopted. Does the committee have any further questions or discussion? So, what this is a split bill. It's a 50-50 split. We did see a financial review of the impacts of that. That was yesterday at the committee. We lost a quorum. Okay, we're going to do it. Well, I'm going to finish my thought, and then we'll do an at ease. So what this bill does is replace a proposal to replace the current statute for calculating the dividend. It is a 50-50 split. It has an effective date of July 1st, 2020, so a year and some change from now. We saw in the committee yesterday that the financial implications does result of the effective date in 2021 would be about an $800 million deficit. So I just want to just state for the record that there is a financial implication for this. So we did lose a quorum, so what we're going to do is go to an at ease and go send the troopers out. I'm just kidding. Okay, we are back on the record, and we do have a quorum to continue. So do the committee members have any amendments to offer? We can take amendments conceptually today. Senator Wilson?
And motion to move.
Want me to do it?
At ease?
We can take it at ease. Okay, we are back on the record. Senator Stedman, could you please review the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We have two fiscal notes in front of the committee today. From the Department of the Permanent Fund, appropriations PFD dividend, allocations of the Permanent Fund dividend, and its OMB component 2616, and that's a zero note. I'd like to reference the committee members to the page 2, and it talks about the aggregate amount on top in column format in billions that would be appropriated, and then the bottom of that is in dollars for potentially the individual dividend itself. So just to be clear, one's in millions and one's in dollars. Now the second item, second fiscal note. We'll just have a brief at ease.
We're having a brief at ease. We're back on the record. We have an updated fiscal note.
Yes, there was two in the packet, but it was taking me a second there, Madam Chairman. I apologize for that. One was an updated note today. So that includes the fiscal note, Madam Chairman.
Okay, so we're finished with the fiscal notes. Senator Stedman, can I have a motion to move the bill?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I'd like to go ahead and make a motion. We move committee substitute for Senate Bill number 103, version G, dated 419 or 42919, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there an objection to moving the bill from committee?
Object.
Senator Wilikowski, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes. This bill changes the way the permanent fund dividend is calculated, and it removes the statutory requirement that the permanent fund corporation transfers funds from the earnings reserve account to the dividend fund, makes it so that the legislature may appropriate it. And I think if we're going to make a change of this magnitude, it should be in the Constitution.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Is there any further discussion? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also, share Senator Wilikowski's sentiments of that something of this magnitude of a change should go to a vote of the folks of Alaskans to do that. With that, we'll support this bill if it is, probably we'll mark it as amend to see what we can do to have that option to go to the folks of Alaska.
Okay. Senator Wilikowski, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Okay, so can the Secretary please call the roll call?
Senator Wilson?
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski?
No.
Senator Bishop?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
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 5 yeas, 1 nay.
By the vote of 5 yeas, the bill moves from committee. Members, please be sure to sign the committee report. And we're going to go into Addie's one more time. Okay? Thank you, committee members. We were on at ease to pass out the new CS. So we have Senate Bill 104 in front of us, an act relating to an appropriation limit relating to the budget responsibilities of the governor and providing for an effective date. Senate Bill 104 was previously heard on April 10th and again on April 29th. We have a CS for your consideration. Senator Stedman, could I have a motion to move the CS?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to move the CS version K for committee consideration. It's a committee substitute for Senate Bill 104, version K, dated 4/29/19 for consideration.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
I think the motion is to adopt the CS, not to move the CS.
Excuse me, did I say move?
Yes.
No. Excuse me. Let me restate that, Madam Chairman. We have a democratic process. That was a slip of the tongue. To adopt the CS for consideration by the committee.
Thank you. So we have a motion to adopt the committee substitute. I will object for the purposes of discussion and ask committee staff Julie Lucky to present the changes in the CS. And Carolyn Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and I am staff of the committee working for Senator Von Imhoff. There is one substantive change and one technical change in the CS in front of you, version K. The substantive change is increasing the appropriation limit to $6 billion from $5 billion, based on the discussion the committee had earlier. You will see that change in two places, on page 1, line 13, with a conforming change on page 3, line 11. There is also a technical correction, which I had noted when we were discussing the previous CS, of deleting some unnecessary language regarding the use of capital appropriations exceeding the cap and taking that into account for the cap in the subsequent years. As this is a cap based on a particular amount and a CPI, that language was unnecessary, and so it has been taken out. It would have appeared in subsection C on page 2 of the bill, but obviously it is not in this current version. Those are the two changes in the CS. They would not have any impact on the fiscal note, which was covered yesterday. That would remain a zero. And that concludes my presentation, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Lucky. Are there questions on the CS? Senator Michicki.
So does this allow, this is, so just an example on a $5 billion UDF budget, this allows $250 to go to capital. Does this allow additional spending on capital in years where you catch up on your savings, you catch up on your, which will happen someday, it will. Catch up on your savings, you catch up on your other requirements, and you have a backlog of deferred maintenance or some other public need. Does it allow spending outside of that $250 million if you find yourself back in that enviable position?
Ms. Lucky.
Senator Michicki, through the chair, to clear up the language regarding the capital appropriations, the bill puts in place an appropriation limit of $6 billion. The capital appropriations language would allow an exception for an amount up to 5% of that amount. So it's not actually 5% of the cap, the money in the cap. It would allow an additional expenditure not to be included in the cap of 5% of whatever the cap was for that year. So basically, extra capital spending should you have the money that would be off book. Capital spending could be done under the cap as well, and that would be up to the legislature to decide. But what the language in the bill does is allows additional spending should you have the cash flow that would not be included in the cap of that amount.
Senator Michicki, follow-up?
So there's two things that are important about an appropriations limit. One is the baseline, and the other is the rate of climb. Why did we choose to go that far above current spend on our UGF spend, which is included under this? It's whoever can answer that question.
Caroline, Ms. Schultz.
Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Caroline Schultz, and I'm staff to the committee in Senator Von Imhoff's office. After our discussions on Senate Bill 103 and Senate Bill 104 yesterday, where the committee determined after reviewing the models that were presented, that with a permanent fund dividend appropriation of either the statutory amount currently written or under consideration with the 50% POMB split, that the $5 billion appropriation limit effective in fiscal year 21 was inadequate. And after discussion here at the table and discussion with members, the determination was made to increase that limit to $6 billion. I have provided updated spreadsheets in members' packets that reflect the $6 billion limit, and there are under three scenarios. Two of the scenarios we discussed yesterday, the first is the consideration that the dividend is paid out of the surplus. The second is with a 50% POMB split dividend, and the third is with the current statutory dividend. And as members can see, because the format of the spreadsheet changed very little from yesterday, that a $6 billion cap is an appropriate starting point considering a dividend that is either a 50% POMB split or something in that ballpark.
So can I,
Senator Marchicki,
reword that for folks at home? So what you're saying is because this bill chose to have the dividend inside of the cap, that when you look at a realistic probability of where the dividend is going to be, it's impossible to do it at a $5 billion cap, that you're going to be somewhat higher. But even at $6 billion, it requires downward pressure and discipline on spending in the future because it's within that cap.
Through the chair, Senator Marchicki, that's correct. If you look at the second spreadsheet in your packet, you can see that in fiscal year 21, with a 50% POMB split calculation for the dividend, that the cap only allows an additional $56 million. So it's a fairly conservative and tight cap.
Thank you.
So thank you. I'd just like to add that while cash flow is in the position that we're in now, the cash flow is less than the cap. So the cap comes into play when cash flow increases significantly. And the cap is when we utilize it when cash flow is high, and then we keep our spending down. It puts the pressure on keep our total spending down. We don't have to spend to the cap. We can choose to put money into savings and not spend it. That is, the amount going into savings is outside of the cap. But we felt that the cap at $5 billion, as you saw with retirement amounts going up, with debt payments going up, was just a little tight and didn't give us as much flexibility as the one for $6 billion. But again, keeping in mind what is the purpose of a cap, it is to keep spending down when cash flow is high. So if we take things out from underneath the cap and everything is beyond the cap, well, then why have a spending cap? It's just a rhetorical question. So, Senator Bishop, did you have a question or a comment?
No, I did, but it was my question was answered and put on the record. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
Senator Marchicki.
Brief comment. No, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the explanation. I think it is helpful, and again, unfortunately, a spending cap doesn't help us today. It's a seed for the future when things do turn around so we don't find ourselves in the same position. But if the choice is to have the dividend inside of the cap, and I think the $6 billion number is the right number. I have one more question on the cumulative change in inflation. That is still the 5% lagging, or the 5-year lagging CPI average. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Marchicki, that is correct. That was clarifying language to emphasize that the 5-year moving average for inflation would be added in subsequent years. A very strict reading of how the bill was written previously that did include that 5-year average could have just kept the baseline $5 billion as it was written, or $6 billion as the case is now, and added the most recent 5 years of inflation without it accumulating over time. So if you imagine in fiscal year 45, if you look back at the last 5 years of inflation, a very strict interpretation of how this bill was written would have just taken that 5-year change and added it back to the original $5 billion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Steadman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a a little bit of a cleanup on row T. I think that on the 50% to PMV, which is page number two, I think that numeric needs to change from 5 to 6, row T. I see it's picked up here in the footnote.
Senator Sedman, through the chair, thank you. You are correct. That should be reflect the change to $6 billion. I will make that change and redistribute. Just for clarification, again, this is Carolyn Schultz. The numerics in the column are correct. It's the note and the title of that column that is incorrect. So the math is right.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Are there any further questions on the CS? I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Oh, Senator Wilson.
Yes, I object.
You object. Okay, would you like to speak to your objection?
Try to talk before you moved your objection.
I am sorry.
You know, we're already changing and upping the cap already, and it hasn't even moved and I understand the rationale for that. You know, this is why I'm more in favor of taking the dividend out of the cap altogether, because it is unfortunately seemed as a subjective issue right now. And, you know, we have one chart that has it, you know, if you leave it as sort of a split with the leftover going to the permanent fund as the budget, you're over $1 billion under the cap, which means you could spend that additional $1 billion if you wanted to leave it at that. Or you could, you know, put the dividend in at a 50-50 split. And we're already seeing sort of what, you know, how subjective that number is, thanks to a particular piece of litigation that went through the process. And so, you know, with that, it's just, I prefer to see the lower $5 billion or sort of what the other bill we have in sort of the constitutional amendment without leaving the Constitution with it. Leaving the PFD outside of the spending cap altogether.
Thank you, Senator Wilson.
Madam Chair.
Machicki.
I think in this case it's important because it's not the cap being, the PFD being inside of the cap takes no position on the PFD, whether it's full PFD or something else. It's just highlighting the total amount you're going to have to account for. So if it remains a full PFD, you're going to have to find the cut somewhere else or other revenue. If something else changes, that's a different story. But without it, you have a tendency to not remember that $1.9 billion or less spend is not going to be a part of the equation. I don't have a problem with it being inside of it. I think we do have to remember wherever you put your priority on the PFD. I think it's important that it's part of remembering that we have to take away from somewhere else, which is fine, but I think that's why it's a part of the cap and why the number went up $1 billion. If I'm correct. I'd love to. That's. I know I didn't ask it as a question, but that is kind of a question.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think at this stage I would agree with Senator Wilson. The amount of the dividend and the attention that the dividend gets throughout the state of Alaska, particularly this year, and I'm going to say that it's going to continue to be a center of discussion for future legislators, future gubernatorial candidates, until that dividend is finally set in the Constitution. So for us to put it into the spending limit, I think weakens the spending limit, and I would state that the reason that I believe that is that it will more likely be ignored because the dividend is going to continue to be the number one issue that people of Alaska continue to focus upon. So if you include it in, it's more likely that, and I've stated this at many stages, it's more likely that the statute will be ignored, the courts will not second-guess future legislators when they ignore that statute. So if you want the spending limit to be adhered to, the number one reason that it will not be adhered to is that if it's restricted by what level the dividend is. So I strongly agree with Senator Wilson. By putting it in there, you're not going to look for additional cuts. You're going to potentially ignore those and go forward. And that is the message that I think that that has been the historic problem with statutory limits. There's always loopholes, but when it comes down to the dividend is going to be king.
Okay, so we have a CS in front of us.
A brief Eddie's.
Okay, we are back on the record. Right now we have an objection from Senator Wilson from adopting the CS. Senator Wilson.
Yes, with those comments, Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Remove your objection. Is there any further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing no objection, then the CS is adopted. Okay, we are going to, at this time, set this bill aside, and please get with my office if you have any questions, amendments, comments. So that it concludes this morning's meeting. Our next meeting will be this afternoon. It is scheduled for 1:30, but it will be delayed to the call of the chair after the floor session. We will hear SB 33, arrest, relief, sentencing, probation, and SB 34, probation, parole, sentencing, and credits. So thank you. We are adjourned.